Hello and welcome to the podcast of Vineyard Church here in Maryville, Tennessee. We post our Sunday messages here each week, as well as our conversations episodes, which include interviews, special announcements, and in-depth teaching. You can visit vineyardchurch.us to learn more about us or to access the audio archive. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple, or Google Podcasts. And now, here's the episode.
Good morning, everybody. Good to be with you today. My name's Josh. We're going to jump into the middle of our Psalm series, which we've been in for a few weeks here in just a second. But first, let me give you just a quick update on a couple of mission trips. One that we just finished, which I'm going to talk about in just a second, our youth mission trip. But first, I want to mention... You probably heard me talk the last few weeks or months about several upcoming mission trips we have. We've got our 55 and older mission trip to the Dominican Republic coming up November 4th through 12th, and we still have space in that one. And so if you meet that demographic, 55 or older, we would love for you to consider coming to that and being a part of that. Come find me after the service or shoot me an email or whatever, and I'll tell you how you can get involved, because the deadline to join that trip is coming up pretty soon. And then we got a few pictures here. We just got back a couple of weeks ago from our youth mission trip. I'm going to sit down so you guys can see in the front there. We had 10 youth go with Lily and I, and it was so much fun. We're working with mostly Haitians and then also some Dominicans, which we've been connecting with for years now. And God really moved. I'm actually going to tell a story from our trip later in the sermon, so stay tuned. But I just want to tell you guys, like, Lily is an amazing youth pastor. Like, she just connects. Yeah, can we give it up for Lily? I've known Lily since she was a kid. Like, she grew up in this church, and so I've known her forever. And, like, you know, she just became the youth pastor over this last year, and she's just crushing it in all the ways. And but it was so awesome just to be with her in the Dominican Republic and see her with the youth. And are any that were on the trip here? Throw your hand up if you were on that trip. All right, there were several on the yeah. Way to go, Kaysen. Shout out from the stage, buddy. Kaysen had us laughing the whole trip. We had such a good time. And so, again, I'll tell a little bit more about that trip later on in the sermon. But let's jump into the psalm. Let me pray one more time, and we'll dig in. Father, we thank you very much for meeting us here. Thank you for this the worship as we were able to celebrate you and sing to you. And now as we look to truths that you want to point us to, would you just center our minds and our hearts on you? Help us to focus in. Help us to put distractions aside and to hear clearly from you. Holy Spirit, speak to us in Jesus' name. Amen. So they just read from Psalm 34, the highlight verse in Psalm 34 is verse 8, where David says, "Taste and see that the Lord is good." And we're going to talk about that part of the psalm quite a bit today. Questions to start us off. How do we know something's good? Like, what is truly good? And how do we qualify what is good? Everybody's got opinions on things, right? This is good, this is bad, this is okay, this is not so great. Are you guys into the World Cup at all? Like, are you guys pumped about 3 o'clock this afternoon? Do you care? I'm so excited. I hate soccer so much. But for like 2 months, every 4 years, I am locked in. I don't know if you guys call it Chris Carpenter. Is Chris in here? Is he? No, you saw him out in the lobby with his Lionel Messi shirt. He doesn't care about Messi. He's just, like, he's got the fever right now. People that never watch soccer are all about the World Cup. And it's been great because it's been mostly in the U.S., also a little bit in Mexico and I think Canada. But most of the matches have been in the U.S. And today's match is in New Jersey. It is featuring probably the greatest athlete of all time. That's what they say, Lionel Messi. And so you should tune in. The world is tuning in. People have the fever, and the people that have come to the United States to watch their teams are just incredible. Have you guys seen the people that are coming from all these different countries? Like, I spent way more time watching YouTube videos of people coming to check out their teams, but also checking out the United States in the meantime. Way more time watching those videos than preparing for this message today. I'll just tell you. It was so entertaining. Like, and the things that people had their minds blown about concerning the U.S. aren't what you think. Like, you would think maybe they thought, oh, the skyscrapers, oh, those are incredible. Or look at the U.S. military. Like, that's pretty big. No. It was unlimited refills at McDonald's that got these people. They couldn't believe it. Their minds were blown. It was Buc-ee's that got these people. Like, they were astounded, not just at the ginormity of this Texas creation, but also at the cleanliness of the bathrooms. They just couldn't believe it. And so I just watched video after video, and there's so many of just all these things. But the thing that seemed to stand out to people the most was like the friendliness of the U.S. people, which was really cool. Like, I think it was kind of hurtful that people came in thinking we were not nice, but they ended up thinking we were really nice. There was this one French guy, and I'm going to quote him in a minute, and I really wanted to do it in my best French accent because it's good. I sound like the cook on Little Mermaid that's chasing the crab. So if you want to hear that, catch me afterwards. But I'm not going to do it because my family's in the room, and they will kill me. This is what he said. He said, everyone says hi. What is this hi everywhere you go? In France, if you say hi to everyone you meet, you will be slapped, but not so in America. Isn't that nice? You know? Yeah. What people found good here in the U.S. was interesting. It wasn't what I saw coming, but it was very encouraging that people found some good things here in the U.S. America is like super divided right now, but it was kind of nice hearing folks from around the world acknowledging the good things that they found in the U.S. So again, how do we know something's good? What is truly good? How do we qualify what is good? There's so many good things in this life. There's money and fame and power and pleasure, and those are good things if utilized in the right ways. They can also be really bad things and really destructive things, and there's so much that's good and bad, but how do we discern what is truly good? And I think what we're going to discover this morning, and it's not going to blow anybody's mind, but the things that are truly good are things that echo into eternity. They're eternal things. They're things that don't pass away. And I want to introduce a concept to us this morning that really highlights the idea of goodness. And it comes from one of the very first things I heard in a philosophy class. I was actually a double major history and philosophy in school because I never wanted to make money. So, yeah. But anyway, in the philosophy class, I really didn't fit in because like everybody in there was depressed and wore black and was like just moping all the time. And I came in and I'm like a pretty optimistic guy, so I'd come in and be like, "Hey guys," and they'd be like, "Ugh," and I'd be like, "Ugh," and it was just it was a downer. But anyways, one of the first concepts that they talked about was one of the most basic concepts in philosophy. It is the concept of the summum bonum, which is Latin for the highest good. And so philosophers all throughout history have talked about it in some form or another. But the person who actually popularized that phrase in Latin, summum bonum, is a guy named Cicero. And he popularized it. But others talked about it, not just from the Western world, but also from the East and all over planet Earth. People have sought to answer the question, what is the highest good? Like, there's lots of goods. There's lots of sub-goods, but what's the highest of the high? Like, at the end of all that is, what is worth putting your life toward? And all kinds of people have an idea about that, right? But what is the highest good for which humans should live? And for David, in Psalm 34:8, he talks about tasting and seeing that the Lord is good for him, for David, and I hope for us today, we would say that the ultimate, the highest good, and this is not going to blow your mind, is God. God is the highest good. He is what is worth tasting, what is worth giving your life to. But what's interesting is when David penned these words, it was not at a time in his life that was easy to say, taste and see that the Lord is good. We find this psalm was actually written during the time period found in 1 Samuel chapter 21, and I'm not going to read it. It's kind of a long story, but here is the context of the story. David was actually in exile when he wrote this. He was running from a king, the king of Israel, named Saul, and Saul was super jealous of David for multiple reasons, but maybe the biggest one is David had killed a guy named Goliath. Probably heard that story, and he was getting like all the fame. David was getting all the fame, and he was getting all the ladies and all this stuff. And so Saul was like super jealous, and so he ends up chasing him. And a lot of the book of 1 Samuel is about Saul chasing the very guy who helped deliver his people, which was David. That's how far Saul's jealousy took him. And so David is in exile. He's running, and finally he gets to the place of his enemies, the Philistines. He literally comes to the king of the Philistines looking for exile. The enemies of his people are the people he had to go to. And so he gets there, and then he gets this idea that the Philistine king is going to have him killed. So now he's like his life's being threatened by two kings, his own people and his sworn enemies. And you know what David does? Because he's so scared, he actually feigns being crazy, and he starts like pulling out his beard and slobbering on himself. That's where David is when he writes this psalm. Like, he's not in a good place. And if you know about David's life, I mean, David is a guy who had been, he'd been on the mountaintop, right? He was the destroyer of lions and bears and giants. He was the most famous and celebrated man in Israel. If you go on and look at his life, David had it all. He had power, he had fame, he had fortune, he had women, he had everything that this world tells us is good. But all of that stuff was not what was going on when he wrote, "Taste and see that the Lord is good." And I just, you know, want to point out the obvious, that one can only make a statement like "taste and see that the Lord is good" during a time like when David was in. One can only make a statement like that if they have decided beforehand what their summum bonum is. If they have decided beforehand what the highest good is. Because it's really easy to say, "Oh, we love you, Jesus, and you're great and you're good and we follow you, we believe you when times are good." But when it's really hard, that's when you kind of see what a person's made of. You see what the deepest part of their life is rooted in. And for David, he didn't say "taste and see that the Lord is good" after he became king or after he killed Goliath or all these things. He did it when he was slobbering on himself, when he was at his worst, when his life was being threatened. And what about us today? Have we decided what we believe about the summum bonum, the highest good? And I don't think it's an overstatement to say that our decision will affect literally everything else in our lives. Like, what your summum bonum is affects everything. Everything else cannot compare to your decision that you make about that. So just moving on to this idea of what is good. Like, we have to discern what is good all the time. And discerning what is good can be hard because there's a highest good, but there's also lots of little goods, right? There's things that we are thinking about, we're pursuing. We've got young people over here. They're trying to figure out what's good. Like, what am I going to give my life to? Maybe I believe in God, but like, what else am I going to give my life to? Like, how do I decide and discern what is good and bad? And it's hard to do that. You guys know what kudzu is? Yeah. If you're from the Southeast, you know what kudzu is. Driving here today, you probably saw kudzu growing. Kudzu is this invasive species. It's actually, we've got some pictures here, yeah. Kudzu is known as the plant that ate the South. Seriously, I didn't make that up. It's called the plant that made the South. That ate the South, excuse me. It can. Did you guys know that kudzu can grow a foot in a single day in the summer? Yeah, it's unbelievable how it can take over. It's originally from China and also made inroads into Japan like hundreds, thousands of years ago. And it's considered an invasive species now because it just completely takes over. I didn't get a picture of this. I wanted to get out there and take a picture. But if you go to South Knoxville today, like kudzu is all over South Knoxville, right? And it's been a big problem for the city of Knoxville. But you guys know the Arby's off Chapman Highway? Like right before you get on Henley Street Bridge. Henley Street Bridge is the bridge where you can look down and see Neyland Stadium where the Vols play. The Arby's right before that, I didn't know this, but the locals there in South Knoxville call it the Jungle Arby's because kudzu has just completely taken over, and it's taken over lots of the South and lots of East Tennessee. But the Japanese and Chinese, you may not know this, they actually utilized kudzu. They found out it has health benefits. It could do all kinds of things like combating inflammation and other things like that. And so when kudzu first came to the U.S., people actually fell in love with it. I had no idea. I've always heard of it being like a super invasive bad thing. But when it first made its way over to the U.S., people actually fell in love with it. People actually planted it and like put it on trellises and put it in their gardens. Can you imagine people doing that with kudzu now? Did you guys know that the government actually brought in kudzu to prevent erosion in the 30s and 40s? So our government brought in kudzu. Like, that's the reason it's here. The government paid farmers to plant it. I did not know this. Like, our government literally paid farmers to plant kudzu, this invasive species. So there were like kudzu evangelists back in the 30s and 40s. One guy even started a kudzu club. I looked this up. It was crazy. Like, he believed that kudzu would resurrect the South, that it would economically help in all these different ways. And so that was kind of the case in the 30s and 40s. But in the 50s, when it really started taking over the South, people started to see that it was getting out of hand and that it was taking over. And then by 1997, our government actually labeled it an invasive weed. So they found out that it affects biodiversity, that it disrupts the natural nitrogen cycle. But then listen to this. The most recent study that I looked at was in 2023. Some whatever smart university people said that it actually prevents air pollution from car emissions coming from highways. And so they're actually thinking about putting it all along highways in some areas now because they think it helps with pollution. So what is it? Is it good or bad? Like, what's the truth about kudzu? What shall we say today about kudzu? Like, it's hard to figure things out, right, if it's good or bad. Guys, if you want to do a deep dive on kudzu, just look up Knoxville's research on how they're planning to combat kudzu. It's unbelievable. Did you guys know that there is literally a goat company in Knoxville that you can hire? I didn't know that. You can hire a team of goats to come and take out the kudzu from your property. I'm thinking about doing it. I don't even have kudzu. I just want a bunch of goats. I don't know how much it costs. But the problem with that is the Knoxville found out goats will, like, you know, trim it away for a little while, but then they don't get to the root, and so it just grows back up, and so you got to keep hiring the goat team. And so it's not easy. And I had no idea, but did you guys know that the highway system across the Southeast has spent millions and millions of dollars combating kudzu? Utility companies have spent millions and millions of dollars. And so is it good or bad? It seems like it's more bad than good. Last thing I'll say about kudzu, because this is way too much. I watched a lot of YouTube videos on the World Cup, and I studied a lot about kudzu. Maybe I should get in the Bible more. Did you guys know the only thing that's proven to work against kudzu? Anybody know what it is? The stink bug. It's what I read. The stink bug can take out kudzu. And so you can either have kudzu, or you can have a bunch of stink bugs. I don't know which one's worse. I think the stink bugs, so we'll just keep going with kudzu. And so often, like kudzu, we think things we are living for are good for a while. Like we go back and forth, and especially young people, we mess around with different things and we say, this seems good, or maybe it's iffy. I'm not sure if I'm going to give myself into it. But then we have temporary pleasures that are related to those good things for a while. And we're like, how can this be bad? Because it seems so good and I feel so good and like I'm happy. And then we've realized that thing doesn't make us happy. And so then we're like, I don't know, but I know at one point it made me happy. So maybe it still will. And for some of us, you know, we latch on to something for a time, and then we realize it's not good, so we let it go. And some of us, we latch on to a thing, and it's hard to let go. And then we keep with it, and it stays with us. And then before long, it becomes our summum bonum. It happens to people all the time, right? Good things, or maybe good things, or kind of good things, become the thing, and then everything gets out of whack. And it happens all the time. Kudzu is really a good picture of something that has good about it, but it is the plant that ate the South, and it's a big problem. And now we have regrets about bringing it here, don't we? I would like to propose the obvious to us today, and I've already said it, that God, as revealed in the person of Jesus, is the ultimate summum bonum. If we really believe that, our lives must be lived in a certain way. You know, when we truly taste and see that the Lord is good, it will drive us to do some pretty crazy things. And there are many stories throughout church history of people who radically altered their lives after fully believing that Jesus is the summum bonum. Let me just give you a couple. There's this guy named St. Francis of Assisi. You guys have heard of that guy, right? I mean, what a Jesus freak, right? This dude was wild. But did you know that growing up, St. Francis, who ended up just radically changing the Catholic Church at the time, St. Francis was super rich. And his daddy was rich. Like, he came from a really rich family. They had all kinds of money. And Francis loved the money. He knew how to spend the money. He knew how to live a really good life. But as he got older and older, he started to see that money is just not fulfilling. And he could see his dad's life and how his dad was just all out of whack. And he was like, there's got to be something more. And eventually, it's a long story, I'm not going to go through it, but he has these divine encounters with the Holy Spirit. And eventually, he ends up renouncing his money and his daddy's money. He's giving all his money away, and he starts giving his dad's money away. His dad was not happy about that. But the summum bonum for Francis growing up was wealth and money. And how can I get more and more and more and more? And we all know, I mean, all of us in the room know that that's not the answer. But so many of us live our lives as if that's the answer, don't we? Like, we get caught up, and before long, it just takes over. Like kudzu, it just takes over. And then we're like, how did that happen? It was a good thing. I was providing for my family. But providing for our family can become an obsession that has our identity found in money. There's so many great quotes that are attributed to St. Francis. A lot of them, we don't know for sure if he said it, including this quote. But I love this quote from St. Francis, this guy who'd been searching. He said, what we are looking for is what is looking. What we are looking for is what is looking. He realized that in his search for something deeper, there was something deeper searching for him all along. There's another guy named St. Augustine. You've heard of St. Augustine, right? He's a great philosopher, one of the most formative thinkers in the church, in church history. He lived like 1,600 years ago or something like that. But St. Augustine, what you may not know, is even though his mom was a Christian, he very much went a different way during his childhood and then up into his early adult years. St. Augustine, actually, you could honestly make an argument that St. Augustine was a sex addict. Like, the guy was crazy about women, and he went from woman to woman, and like, he, the circles he ran in, it was all about getting the most pleasure in sex as you could, and that's what his friends lived for, and that's what he lived for. His summum bonum was pleasure. It was desire, and he kept seeking after it until he had an encounter with Jesus, and until his summum bonum was Jesus. And then he ends up totally reversing his lifestyle and changing his lifestyle, which was not easy, because somebody that's caught up in sexual addiction and sexual brokenness and things like that, I know it is hard to get out of that. And that was Augustine's case. It was not easy. It's not like it happened overnight. You can read about his story. But for him, he realized that there's got to be something more than this. For Francis, it was money, and for Augustine, it was pleasure, and you could go on and on and on about the different things that we get caught up in and the things that take over our lives. But I love what Augustine says. I got a couple quotes from him. This is maybe his most famous one. He says, "Thou hast made us for thyself, O Lord, and our heart is restless until it finds its rest in thee." See, when he found the summum bonum, when he found the deepest thing that was calling him, was drawing him, was wooing him, he realized that everything else paled in comparison. Everything else. He goes on to say, in order to discover the character of people, we have only to observe what they love. He said, you want to know what people's summum bonum is? Find out what they love. Find out what they're most passionate about. And then this is so beautiful what he says, the last thing from Augustine. He says, to fall in love with God is the greatest romance. This is a guy coming from all kinds of minor romances, you know. So he says, to fall in love with God is the greatest romance. To seek him, the greatest adventure. To find him, the greatest human achievement. You might as well just say, to find him, you find the summum bonum. And then I don't have this on the screen, but I've quoted this C.S. Lewis quote before, but C.S. Lewis just puts his finger right on it. He says this, it would seem that our Lord finds our desires not too strong, but too weak. We are half-hearted creatures, fooling about with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered us. Like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the sea. We are far too easily pleased. And all these guys just put their finger right on it, don't they? And we know this. We know that these minor goods can't compare with the ultimate, but we get caught up, and even Christians, we get caught up. At one point, we said, yes, you are my everything, Jesus, and then life happens, and kudzu trickles in. It comes slowly, slowly, until it's this invasive thing that takes over, and all of us have had to wrestle with our demons and the things that we are dealing with, and that's okay. That is what it means to be human, unfortunately. It's not the ultimate thing that it means to be human, though. The ultimate thing that it means to be human is that we were created in God's image and we were made good. But we turn and we fall away because life is hard. Discerning what is good and bad is hard. I'm not making light of that today, and I'm not here to give any kind of guilt trip. That's just not what we're doing. By the way, that's just not what our church is about. We're not about giving guilt. I've been to far too many churches and been around far too many Christians that want to point out all the bad stuff about me. I know the bad stuff about me. I'm ready for people that will walk with me as I pursue the ultimate good. What is the highest good, and how can we pursue that? Because when you start going after that, all the other stuff gets worked out. I hear all kinds of people, I got to get my life cleaned up. Josh, I'm going to come to church, but I got to get my life cleaned up. Yeah, Josh, I'm going to get right with God, but I got to get my life cleaned up. That's just never going to happen. You start with Jesus. He will help you get your life cleaned up. And there are people here today, and you got some junk in your life, and I'll just tell you, it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to have the kudzu, but it's not okay to stay where you are. Why would you want that? Why would we want that, you know? So we got to learn how to cut the kudzu, and the only way to cut the kudzu is to start with Jesus, because anything else is just man-made efforts, and it doesn't work. It's striving. When we truly taste and see that the Lord is good, it not only fulfills our deepest longing as humans, but it can sustain us during the dark seasons of life, just like it sustained David, because he had made up his mind beforehand what the summum bonum is. I told you I was going to share another story from our youth trip recently. Look, there's tons of Haitians living in the Dominican Republic. Haiti's such a mess, and so some of them come over legally, but the vast majority, especially now, have to come over illegally. Or even if they have come over legally, they aren't able to renew their paperwork because things are so busted, and the system's so busted in Haiti right now. And so a lot of the families that we were working with a couple weeks ago have their paperwork or had their paperwork to be there and work legally in the Dominican Republic, but because they haven't been able to renew it, now they're illegal. And so I was actually was it 2 weeks ago today preaching? I think it was 2 weeks ago today. I was on a very different stage in a very different type of church. I was in a Haitian church with these guys way up in the mountains in the Dominican Republic. Most of the Haitians were there either illegally but the vast majority had been legal. They just couldn't get their paperwork renewed, right? And so their options were to go back to a Haiti that is super dangerous. Some of them had been in the Dominican Republic for literally decades. So their whole lives were there. They'd had children there, okay? So I'm preaching up on the stage, and we didn't have a very good translator on that day. So I was preaching in Creole, and my Creole's okay. I can get by. And so it's going to be a very basic message, right? And so I'm preaching, but the people are into it, and I'm like, oh, sweet. Like, I'm crushing it. I'm doing good. I feel good. And then they get more into it, and I'm like, I got this. And then so I started getting, animated, and then people started, like, standing up, and I'm like, yes, like, let's go. And then they started running out the back of the church, and I was like, did I translate something bad? Then the worship pastor who was standing over here jumps out the window. And it's like a bomb went off in the room, and I look over at the youth, and they're like, what do we do? We're all like, what is going on? And then I heard the word immigration. They were doing a raid, which happens a lot in the Dominican Republic, and some of them are pretty brutal. There's a lot of great Dominican immigration officers that are just doing their job. There's a lot of not so great ones. Man, it was like a bomb went off. So much I could tell you about that story, but they ended up arresting four Haitian men. We were told, we were worried that we might have, brought attention. We were told later, no, they didn't know you were there. And we actually had seen some of the Dominican officers. And when they first saw us, they were like, well, what in the world are these guys doing in the middle of a Haitian church way up in the mountains? So they didn't know we were there. We were actually told that because we were there, very likely many others didn't get arrested. I don't know for sure. But they arrested four guys. Bertico, who's our Dominican driver, who is just a hilarious guy, great guy, he was outside when it happened, and so he saw the whole thing happen. And now he'd been seeing this in the news in the Dominican Republic. He knew the situation between Haitians and Dominicans. But Bertico saw the whole thing unfold for the first time. He'd never seen a raid like that. And one of the little boys of one of the men that got arrested came up to him, and he said, they took my dad. And it just broke Bertico. I went up to one of the Haitian pastors, a guy named Junius, and I noticed because we were all kind of in shock, but I noticed that Junius had not moved. And so I went up to him and I said, hey, man, I noticed you stayed. Like, so I guess you got your paperwork in order. And he said, nope. And I said, what? Like, why did you not run with most everybody else? And he said, because these are my people. I can't leave them. I was like, whew, that's a pastor. Like, if that happened in this room today, I'd be like, peace, y'all. But, no, I'm just kidding. I think I would stay. But he was like, no, these are my people. Like, I'm, and so he risked being deported. And, story after story of things that happened in that short time, period. Those four guys ended up going down to an immigration holding area, and we got word the next day that they were going to release one of them, which never happens. We don't know all the details of why. And then we got word that those four Haitians started ministering to the other Haitians that were in that holding area, and they started sharing their faith and praying for their Dominican officers. And they led two of the Dominican officers to the Lord. Yeah. Which for a Dominican officer to allow himself to be led to the Lord and ministered to by a Haitian is wild. And man, there's just so many other cool things that happened. Now, a couple days after that, we actually got word that they ended up releasing all four of them, which is absolutely miraculous. So happy end of the story. But those things happen to Haitians all the time. Now, the reason I tell the story, A, is because it's a cool story to share with you guys. As a church that sends out, you know, 10 young people to work with Haitians way up in a mountain. But I also tell that story because what Haitian individual, when their life is being ripped apart and they're in incredibly uncomfortable, and they are, by the way, incredibly uncomfortable immigration facilities in the Dominican Republic, thinks, oh, I need to share my faith. Oh, I need to pray and minister to others. And I would pose to you only an individual that has decided long beforehand what their summum bonum is. That they have said, he has sustained me in the good times and he will sustain me in the hard times, but he is my highest. So when we truly taste and see that the Lord is good, it can sustain us during the dark seasons of life. And finally, when we truly taste and see that the Lord is good, we care about what is near to the heart of Jesus. We care about what is near to the heart of Jesus. Last story I'll tell is this. I love history and World War II. I mean, I could just like watch documentaries on World War II for the rest of my life. It's just such a crazy time in the world's history. But you guys know the tragedy, 6 million Jews roughly lost in the Holocaust, lost their lives. You know which Jews didn't lose their lives? I just found this out. The Jews from Bulgaria. They say that there were about 50,000 immigrant Jews living in Bulgaria during the time of the Nazi regime. And almost all 50,000 ended up having their lives spared. And the reason is because the Bulgarian people refused to give them over to the Nazis. Now, Bulgaria was an ally of the Nazis during World War II. And the Nazis were telling all of the people that their country had influence or dominion over, you got to give up the Jews. You got to send them to these concentration camps. You got to get them out. Three times they put heavy pressure on Bulgaria, and three times the people rose up and said, you can't have them. Now, Bulgaria, to be clear, was a Christian country. There's the Orthodox Bulgarian Church. And by the way, their outfits, the priests' outfits, are wild. I'm just so thankful I don't have to wear what they wore. You should look it up. I should have had a picture. They have some weird ideas, weird beliefs, stuff that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But they're Bible people, they're Jesus people, and they have a high value of this idea of the highest of highs being Jesus and all our allegiance going toward him. And because of that, they said, Jesus is not okay with this, and they stood their ground in the face of the Nazis. And the church led the way. I did a deep dive on this. This story is fascinating, but the church led the way. And some of the leaders of the church actually put their lives on the line on behalf of these 50,000 Jews that were there as immigrants. They weren't even their own people. They put their lives on the line. There's a story of one of the leading clergymen throwing himself over a wall of a temporary holding facility that the Jews were being held in before they were possibly going to be shipped out to the concentration camps. He threw himself over the wall, and they said, what are you doing? And he said, wherever they go, I go. Who does that? Like who gives their lives like that? Again, I would pose only somebody who's decided what the highest is. Decided beforehand, and that will influence the decisions that we make when the rubber hits the road. And for that Orthodox priest with his giant hat, I don't know if his hat fell off, throwing himself over the wall, but the dude did it, and the rest is history. And now you can watch documentary videos of the ancestors that are still living to this day, the children and the children's children from those 50,000 Jews that didn't die, like 6 million that did because other people cowered in fear. Other people, many of which called themselves Christians, by the way. You see, This Bulgarian priest had learned something in life, and it's the big principle today. It's the kingdom principle of losing in order to gain. It's a Jesus principle. Jesus became a loser to win us. It's an upside down way of living. It's not normal. It's countercultural. You want to know who the most countercultural person in the history of the world? It was Jesus. Lose in order to win? St. Francis believed this, and so he gave up everything. He gave up great wealth. Augustine believed this, and so he gave up his sexual identity, what he had chosen to follow in terms of his sexuality. And so many others have come to believe this, because when you find the summum bonum, everything else pales in comparison. Everything. Listen to how the Apostle Paul describes this. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, he says, "We now have this light shining in our hearts, but we ourselves are like fragile clay jars containing this great treasure. This makes it clear that our great power is from God, not from ourselves. We are pressed on every side by troubles, but we are not crushed. We are perplexed, but not driven to despair. We are hunted down, but never abandoned by God. We get knocked down, but we are not destroyed. Through suffering, our bodies continue to share in the death of Jesus so that the life of Jesus may also be seen in our bodies." And listen to this. "That is why we never give up." Verse 16. "Though our bodies are dying, our spirits are being renewed every day. For our present troubles are small and won't last very long. Yet they produce for us a glory which vastly outweighs them and will last forever. So we don't look at the troubles we can see now. Rather, we fix our gaze on things that cannot be seen. For the things we see now will soon be gone, but the things we cannot see will last forever." Do you hear what Paul's saying here? When we stop settling for the fleeting things of life that are here today and gone tomorrow, when we realize that the summum bonum, the highest good, is a person whose name is Jesus, and when we choose his eternal way over our own way, then even the hardest things in life can be endured. Then we have something to live for, something higher than just eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. When we choose as our highest good, what we choose as our highest good echoes into eternity. And what we give our lives to matters. And God's offer to us today is to choose him, to choose his way, and to join him as he renews a broken world. It's why we say all the time, we're joining God in the renewal of all things. So before we finish here, just can you imagine a church service? Look, I know many of us are here today because we want to be. Many of us were just filling, checking off a box and everything in between. That's okay. Can you imagine a church service, though, where you came in and the worship is just unbelievable and the preaching is just spot on and your children are okay because the children's ministry is great, and everybody's happy and everybody's moral and ethical and they even dress nice, And then can you imagine Jesus not being in there? Can you imagine Jesus being just outside in the mud holding somebody that's hurting and broken? And can you imagine Jesus yelling back in the church, "Will anybody come here and join me?" And I'm not giving you that picture because what's happening here is bad. This is very, very good. We come here to be mobilized. But if we miss God's heart for the world and the brokenness, if we're such good winners that we don't know how to lose anymore, we might have missed the summum bonum along the way. We might have missed the heart of God and his heart for people.